Good morning. It's 29th of April. Our New Testament reading today is Acts chapter 7. I'm going to read to you from Brother Harry Whittaker again. This chapter in Brother Harry's book is headed The Death of Stephen. I read. Luke surely had the story of the lynching of Stephen from Paul himself. His brief account is packed with vivid dramatic detail. The climax of denunciation to which the Lord's witness came at last was too much for the assembly, which up to this moment had let him go on uninterrupted. Now, cut to the heart, which literally means sawn in two in their hearts, they gnashed on him with their teeth. It is remarkably easy to get the wrong impression from these phrases. The first does not mean that their emotions were aroused, though that was certainly the case by this time, but rather their thinking was cut in two. They had become men of divided convictions. How especially true that was of Saul of Tarsus. There was no escaping the impact of Stephen's sustained biblical reasoning, yet prejudice and self-interest alike refused consent to the inevitable conclusion. They sat there, grinding their teeth, not upon him, but regarding him and what he had said. The same phrase occurs in Revelation 1, verse 7. This attitude had continued through much of Stephen's discourse. The words describe neither regret nor remorse, as they are often mistakenly read in the Gospels, but anger. Stephen, unperturbed by the signs of their intensifying hostility, was not to be hindered in his witness. Looking steadfastly into heaven, precisely as the apostles had done at the time of the ascension, he, like them, witnessed a remarkable vision of the Shekinah glory of God, and the men before him saw that glory reflected in his face. Men of Israel could not steadfastly behold the glory in the face of Moses, as we read in 2 Corinthians chapter 3. But this saint in Christ, pure in heart, saw God and was made bold for his final word of witness. The vision took a specific form. He saw the heavens opened, as Ezekiel had done, and as happened also at his Lord's baptism, and Christ there, in glory, standing on the right hand of God, as though he were a high priest ministering in a true holy of holies. Yet it was not to exercise his priestly mediation that Jesus now stood in the heavenly presence, but in order to claim fulfilment of his Father's promise. Ask of me, and I will give thee the Gentiles for thine inheritance. Already there was palpable evidence that the chosen race was hardening in its rejection of their Messiah. So now surely was the time when God's wider purpose of gathering in Gentiles should go into operation. Though Israel be not gathered, yet shall I be glorious in the eyes of the Lord. And he said, It is a light thing that thou shouldest be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob. I will also give thee for a light to the Gentiles, that thou mayest be my salvation to the ends of the earth. Those words come from Isaiah 49. Stephen, ecstatic at sight of the heavenly vision and recognizing the person of his Lord, told what he saw, consciously employing almost the very words which that same high priest and Sanhedrin had heard from the lips of Jesus at his trial. Behold, I see the heavens opened, and the Son of Man standing on the right hand of God. Here was not only Psalm 110, which these learned men had heard quoted by Jesus to their own confusion, but also in the use of Son of Man, there was deliberate appropriation of Daniel 7, verse 13, with its vision of a Son of Man ascending to the presence of the Ancient of Days and receiving authority over Gentiles as well as Jews. Thank you for listening.